Hello, Internet, and welcome to State Report Junior, the podcast you should be. I got this. Hold on. Hello, Internet, and welcome to State Report Junior, the show you should be listening to, subscribe to, and downloading whenever we put it out.
There you go.
This is one of your hosts, Zach Sarowick.
And I'm your other host, Dale Degger.
I came at that one too fast. I came at that one like without any warm up. Without any warm up, I was like, okay, we're gonna go head on into. Oh, that's a wall. Okay.
It's okay. It's all good.
Oh man.
We got there eventually.
I am. My headphones are sitting weird on my head because I have less hair now. I'm furiously having an internal debate about whether or not I shave to go along with it. So. That's about as exciting as my thought processes get these days.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that if you're going out, you're wearing a mask, so having a beard under a mask, how does that feel? Probably not comfortable.
It's been fine. It's just that, like, there's a thing that happens where if you wear a square of fabric over just a specific part of your hair for months on end, it reshapes your beard a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, take the mask off after work, and I have, like, a very clear, like, this part, this square of my hair is, like, folded down, and the rest of it is just kind of sticking out.
Yeah. So, you do you.
Yes, we're in this weird spot now where, as the world tries to, well, the world, the country, the state really can't even get its act together, tries to decide what's reopening, staying closed, and all of this, like, my second job is coming back to work, a job that probably shouldn't be reopening, but I really want more money because it's and an excuse to get out of my house more. So just take it as a compliment that they called me back to bring me back to work, and that I work at a specific part of that building where I have to be alone. So
there you go.
I have a set distance that I just work within, which makes me feel better anyway.
Nine plexiglass.
But, I don't know if there's. I don't know if there's gonna be plexiglass up there. I just know there's like a 2.5 foot bar already, plus all of the crap that's then in front of me at the bar. So I'm standing back another foot and a half from that.
Yeah.
I got a good amount of space.
We'll see.
But anyway, how have you been?
I've been good. So 2 weeks, right? Two weeks have happened since our last episode. Was the last episode when I got the shiny Popplio? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, as far as Pokemon news is concerned, because we physically cannot go one episode not talking about Pokemon, I have officially completed the Isle of Armor Pokedex.
Yay! I have not.
Okay. I mean, I feel like you should be close because of all the trading and stuff we did.
Here's the thing. That would have put me close if I had done, like, there's a bunch of stuff just like I just haven't done. Like, I when we played, I was like, oh yeah, I haven't even, like, finished the story part to it because at some point I was like, because I was, like, playing the game and then I was like, oh, I've got one fight left. I'm going to go do a bunch of Pokemon catching stuff. And then I got completely distracted and I haven't played the game in forever.
I mean, I haven't played in a long time either. Like, the reason why I decided to, like, really start, you know, I beat the story of Isle of Armor, and then you do, like, I don't remember if the post stuff is post or pre, but there's stuff with Hop that you do, and to get Urshifu's, like, Dynamax or G-Max, and I can't remember if that's before or after. But I did all of that, and then I started shiny hunting. But there was one day where I was shiny hunting, and Devin was sitting next to me, and he was like, you haven't finished Isle of Armor Pokedex? And I'm like, I haven't. I should do that. Before I continue shiny hunting, I should finish the Isle of Armor. But lo and behold, as I'm getting these other Pokemon, I see Hop again on a beach. And it's like, I know if I talk to Hop, there's going to be more story. Which is fine, but goddamn, I just want a shiny hunt.
I definitely, like, part of the problem with my armor decks is that, like, I caught the right number of Pokemon, but have not also sat down and done the evolution work on a lot of them.
Yeah.
So, like, I have two or three Jigglypuff, but I had Savick have sat down and gotten the Wiggly. I haven't, like, given one a Moonstone yet and made a Wigglytuff. Like, that sort of thing.
The thing, too, is, like, Isle of Armor is so weird because you can find every Pokemon. Like, theoretically, if you wait long enough, you can fill up your decks simply by just catching the Pokemon. And that was made painfully evident today when I loaded up on my second account to try and get a Kubfu. Because fun fact, if you load up a second account and you have the Isle of Armor, the expansion pass already, you can still play the expansion pass for the game that you bought it for. So in order to fill the Pokedex on Pokemon Home, because not enough just to fill it in-game, you gotta do it on the mobile and the, you know, just bank app, right? I wanted to get a Kubfu, because for obvious reasons, I evolved my Kubfu, because you need to for the story.
Because the game happened.
It requires you to. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, I'll, you know, I had already done it to try and get some, like, information about how the Isle of Armor works on a secondary account. And so I forgot how not late, but I don't have a bike right now. So I was just, like, running around the Isle of Armor, and I'm like, this sucks without a bike.
Wait.
I need a bike.
How do you not have a bike right now?
Because
you just have it. It's just in your inventory.
No. You specifically get the bike on the... You save, like, a doctor on the bridge, and that's when you get the bike.
Oh, right, because you're replaying again.
Yeah.
Yep, I forgot that you had...
It's
okay.
A secondary account, so it's completely...
You're starting fresh.
And the only thing I've done on that account is I've gained access to the wild area, the first wild area, and then as soon as you get that, you go talk to the train person in Wedgehurst, and you can automatically access Isle of Armor.
Right.
You can get the Isle of Armor Pokemon at low level and use them through your playthrough, which is really cool. So I'm running around Isle of Armor, and, like, there's a Licky Licky just walking around, and I work so hard to make a Lickitung my friend. And it's like, oh, cool. And then I walk through the forest. There's a Tangrowth or whatever. Just walking.
Yes.
I saw two. And then a Lopunny and, like, everything that you... And the trade Pokemon, too, are out there. Like, you can find an Alakazam just flying around.
But I believe a lot of those are tied to weather. I don't know about percentages, but definitely they're tied to weather as part of it.
Well, that's what I mean by, like, if you wait long enough, you can just find these Pokemon. You don't... What we did the other night of just, like, trading and hatching eggs and getting eggs for each other... Theoretically, you don't have to do that. It makes it easier, but, you know. So I finished that, and I'm working on getting a Kubfu, so I'm replaying Isle of Armor, basically. Just the first half to get a Kubfu. So, I'm crazy, is basically what it comes down to.
And I'm still trying to remember how to get a damn Emolga down from the tree.
You gotta whistle! I told you!
I remember you telling me that, but I forget how that starts, because then I went and that was why I went back and fought Mustard, because I thought it would give me whatever that was, and they still haven't.
No,
so
all you have to do is hit the joystick in. You, like, R3 or it's L3. That's how you whistle. You're not given a whistle.
Is that just a thing you can do in this game?
That's just a thing you can do in this game.
Did not know that. Never used it. Never thought it was ever taught to me. Never seemed important.
It was in trailers and stuff.
I mean, again, though, like, it's not like the game ever requires you. This is literally the first time the game has ever required me to use that to get a Pokemon down from a tree. Otherwise, I have never had...
Although it explains
a lot about all of those ones in the wild area that are just, like, floating above your head that are just annoying to chase down when you don't whistle.
That's how you get them, their attention.
Nope,
you whistle
Didn't know this.
Bravery and all of the...
Nope, I just waited for them to finally
float low enough to dive bomb you.
Yes, but that's the thing. They usually do, because if they usually out in the wild area, if you get their attention, they dive bomb you and it's fine. Emolga is the first time that it did not do that.
That's
that it just went from branch to branch in a bunch of trees and never dive bomb when it saw you.
That's great. You don't test out your pushing? Your push pads?
I mean, I probably did. Here's the thing. I probably did, but I probably hit that button randomly in a spot where it didn't do anything, and I just forgot it did that. Because, again, the game doesn't do, like, a thing that's like, oh, here's how you get that one down from up there.
It might. Like, there might be a point where you're in the wild area of just, like, the vanilla
game. Oh, yeah,
game,
no, I'm sure, like, a random person tells you. But, I mean, like, it's not like the story ever is like, hey, here's how you get this one down in the wild area or something like that.
You have to, I mean, if you know about whistling, you know, oh, you know, that's how it works. But now you can get your Imogla. Imogla.
Yay!
Yeah.
I remember you saying you have to whistle, and in my head I went, oh, okay, that must be a thing I learned later.
Or if you're on your bike, you ring a bell. Then it's the same thing.
Okay, so you know what? I think I knew that on the bell. I knew that on the bike, but I don't know why it never occurred to me to try it on the bike, or I've never done it. I don't think, again, I think I've done it while riding around, just hitting the button randomly, but I've never connected that to doing anything important other than ringing a fucking bell.
There's a bunch
I think every time I hit that, I go, yeah, it's weird that they let you do that. It doesn't do anything in this game. Well, there we go.
Yeah, there's a bunch of videos. There's, like, funny videos of people, like, in the wild area. And I've done it, too, because it's super fun. Where, like, there's a cluster of, like, 5 overworld Pokemon. And you ring the bell or you whistle. And all of them turn to you with the exclamation point and start charging at you. And it's hilarious and really scary and fun. But yeah. But that's really all I'm doing in Pokemon is just working on filling that. It just sucks because I'm going to fill the Pokemon Home Galar decks, except for Zarude, which so far right now, Zarude is only available. What the hell is that? Hi, spider. Go that way. That's okay. Sorry. I thought it was a piece of fuzz, and it's a baby long legs. It's very tiny. It's climbing up now. Anyways, Zarude is currently only available through code if you pre-order a ticket for the Pokemon movie Coco in Japan. So I have to wait for Zarude to get a global release.
Oh, you don't want to just pay for a ticket for a movie in another country?
It's like $30. I've done the research. I'm like, is it worth it? And it's like it's closer to $40.
If this were the 90s, that movie would be the biggest selling ticket sales in world. Solely because American parents were talked by their kids into buying tickets for it to get a code for a Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, other than Pokemon, so I started the Avengers game today, which I haven't really gotten too far into it. It's interesting enough. I won't go too far into that. We'll see how it progresses.
I'm interested. Like, I've seen other people talking about how, like, once you're actually just playing the single player campaign versus the sporadic levels that they're trying to force you through in the beta, that it plays a little better and the story is better and all that. It just is a thing that I just don't know if it's ever going to be. It sounds like the sort of game I'm going to pick up on sale one day, like 3 years from now.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's weird because, like,
and even
I wasn't all that impressed with the beta. There's just, like, certain functions that I don't love, but so far the story's kind of cool. I mean, the opening interactive cinematic so far is pretty cool. So we'll just see where it goes. I'll probably have more to talk about once I actually get into the meat of the game, but as for right now, it's okay. It's fine. and then really just been watching movies. Within the past 2 weeks, I believe I've watched 4 movies. There may be more. I don't remember. But basically watched Beetlejuice finally.
Oh yeah. I forgot that was after that last episode.
I got
some
stuff to say about Beetlejuice. Troop Zero. The Spy Who Dumped Me and Foul Play. Which I don't know if you've seen any of those. I know you've seen Beetlejuice.
I haven't seen Spy Who Dumped Me. Foul Play, I don't remember. And Troop Zero sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
Yeah. So Troop Zero was the Amazon, or it's Amazon.
That's right.
With Viola
yes.
Davis. Is it Viola Davis?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that movie, out of those four movies I just mentioned, stellar, fantastic. Everybody should see this movie. I would watch it right now if I could. Like,
cool.
It's so good, so heartfelt. Like, my mom, Devin, and I were crying the entire time. Like, happy tears, sad tears, just like it gets you. It hits you. In a lot of places, but it's just so good. And the other three movies are movies. They're okay.
I love the fact that you're so clearly dancing around Beetlejuice right now because you didn't like it. Here's the thing. It's been so long. I own it. I think it's a very good movie. I've always laughed at it and enjoyed it. I also haven't watched it now in like 3 years, so it's not like I can sit here and like justifiably defend it. So like, I'm interested to hear what your thoughts were on it. I'm not going to sit here and like be upset that you didn't like it.
Well, good. Before I get to that, though, yeah, Foul Play is Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn.
Oh, okay, and okay. That's just, why. I think in my head, I was like, I think that's an older movie, but did I miss a newer movie named Foul Play? But no, you're talking about the older movie.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It's all right. It's got certain parts that are okay. It just overall, it didn't jive with me, which I feel. So we have been watching these movies that, like, my parents and Devin have all seen pretty much, and I haven't seen, but they're movies that I should see. And so far, I haven't liked any of them.
Hey, Dale, as someone doing a similar project, guess what? You're not alone in that field.
I feel bad. Like, so we've done, what have we done? Sharky's Machine, Hoosiers, Beetlejuice, Foul Play, and I think there was one more, but I can't remember it right now. It could just be those, but I could be missing one. And like, Hoosiers was good, but I had so many questions at the end of it that it kind of like ruined the movie.
Which is a weird thing. Not a thing I think I've ever heard about Hoosiers. Only thing I ever hear about Hoosiers is, hey, cool basketball movie. Other than that, I don't know anything. Well, so the plot left me asking questions like, really? I didn't know there was a plot to Hoosiers.
Well, it was just like, I don't know. I can't. I don't know.
I wonder if it was one of those things that, because that's based on a true story, right? I know it's obviously based on a real I know that Hoosiers are real things. I just couldn't remember the actual story of
nothing,
the movie Hoosiers.
I don't think
was
any
based on a real thing.
I don't think anywhere in the movie or anything it says based on true events. But my dad said it was based on true events, so I believe my dad. And like, I definitely believe that's based on true events. So that makes it even harder to like not like the story elements, because it's like, this really happened. So, but it's just like at the end, like the whole movie, if you haven't seen Hoosiers, right? So it's a basketball team and they're not that great. And,
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman comes.
The only thing I know about Hoosiers, don't take that away from me.
Gene Hackman comes and is like the new basketball coach, which I almost said baseball because for 100 years, I thought this movie was about baseball. Don't know why, just thought it was about baseball. So like, I was super excited, and then I found it was about basketball. I'm like, oh, okay. I have bad memories with basketball, so there's that. But a baseball movie like that excites me. So already down a hole we go, right? And so it's basketball. It's Gene Hackman. I love Gene Hackman, and he comes. He's like, basic underdog story, turns the team around, they get to the, you know, the championships and all of that. And there's a moment where they're the star player of the town, the previous coach dies, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he dies. And so the star player of the town is like, I'm not playing basketball anymore. Nope, I'm done. I'm out. And plus he's dealing, I think his mom is sick too, if I'm remembering correctly. So like, this kid has a lot of stuff going on in his life, and everybody's like, without Jimmy, we're going to fail. We need Jimmy. Any way we can get him back. And it's like, this poor kid is dealing with shit. Like,
but Dale, sports fixes it. Sports fixes everything. That's the lesson that Hoosiers has brought into the world.
But no. It just brings up whole other issues with, like, professional sports that I have and, like, college sports and shit.
This is great, because, Dale, what's happened is that you're watching this movie from a time when all of this stuff kind of got, like, solidified. To watching it now when we all realize, oh, solidifying that was a bad thing.
I mean, yeah, so, like, that's the thing. So then, halfway through the movie, Jimmy's like, everybody doesn't want the Gene Hackman to be the coach because he, like, he did some bad stuff in his past, so they were like, we don't want him, we don't trust him, blah, blah, blah.
Because he's Emilio Estevez from Mighty Ducks.
Yeah. Jimmy comes into, like, this meeting where they're voting out the coach, and they have already voted and said he's out. And then Jimmy walks in and is like, I'll play again. Room erupts with outpouring, like, excitement and just pride and happiness. And then he's like, if the coach stays. And then the room just is, like, dead silent. It's like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, no shit. This is going to happen. And that's the ultimatum that's going to happen. And then magically they're a great team. And it's like, yeah, no shit. This doesn't make me feel anything for this underdog team. Of course all they needed was the best player of the town. It's not like any of them, it just didn't feel anything. And then you have the beautiful moment with Ollie, who has, like, basically been the equipment manager of the team. And you have a beautiful moment where, like, he gets his moment on the court, and, like, he gets to get the winning shot. He gets to do his part, and it's beautiful. And that's the best part of the movie. And then the rest of the movie happens, and they go to the, like, championships or whatever. And Gene Hackman's plan is, listen, we're going to psych them out, right? We're going to make them think that Jimmy's getting the ball, but we're going to pass it to this other guy. We're going to pass it to Buddy, right? Which, issues with Buddy, too. We're going to pass it to Buddy. And then the entire team just gets silent and, like, upset about that. And then Gene Hackman's like, what? And then Jimmy says, no, I can do it, coach. And it's like, that's not the question here, Jimmy. We know that you can do it.
That's the point. Everybody knows you can do it, Jimmy. Like, that's the part. That's what makes it a psych out.
That's why we're using you to draw their attention. So that Buddy, and it just felt so, like,
you know, I like this movie. I like this movie better in 2000 when they remade it with Gene Hackman and it was just The Replacements with Keanu Reeves.
God.
Almost entirely the same plot, only now it's football.
Oh, really?
It's still Gene Hackman as the coach.
I haven't seen The Replacements, like, it's cognitively.
I forget what happens to the main team, but for some reason they can't play, so they go to Keanu Reeves and they get together a bunch of replacement players, and then they just play football good. Yeah. But Gene Hackman's the coach in that too, and it's basically like, what if Hoosiers was a football comedy?
I mean, it was weird. I mean, like, out of those movies that we've been watching that I should see, Hoosiers has definitely been the better one. But Beetlejuice, like, moving to Beetlejuice, okay. my whole life, right, I have grown up around people who have watched Beetlejuice and loved the movie, like, will quote it or whatever, like, live by it and all of that, right? So I'm like, oh, this movie must be pretty good if a bunch of people my age really enjoy it and, like, have kind of in ways not shaped their lives around it, but, like, it's a big part of their lives,
right?
It's
a big reason that Tim Burton is who he is. Like, without Beetlejuice, you don't then get Edward Scissorhands, and you don't get him going on to Nightmare Before Christmas and all this other stuff.
So it's definitely just, like, this nostalgia thing. Like, all of these people watched it as kids, and it grew into this, like, a part of their lives, right? Which is fine, and that's cool.
It was at some point, it became a Nickelodeon. It was a cartoon. And it was a cartoon. Well, what's weird about it is that it was a cartoon relatively quickly after it came out. But then it re-aired a bunch of times, like, throughout the years on Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon. Like, it got, like, the Animaniacs treatment of coming out and on syndication in, like, 1,000 different places.
Yeah, so it was weird. Like, so it was definitely accessible to people my age. And I just never really cared about it. Never. I don't like Tim Burton generally. When I was in school, I was like kind of Tim Burton's bad, and like that was like my stance during school. And then like it hasn't really changed.
Here's the thing: I like the Beetlejuice version of Tim Burton. I like Beetlejuice, and I like Edward Scissorhands, and I actually like the fact that, as far as Nightmare Before Christmas goes, he designed it but did not actually direct it. I think that's part of the problem, is that Nightmare Before Christmas blows up to the point where everything he does afterwards is him chasing Nightmare Before Christmas, even though he really only had, you know, he had a different part to that than the directing part.
The thing about Nightmare Before Christmas, like, this is where I really started not liking Tim Burton, is because I watched Nightmare Before Christmas with people, again, who, like, grew up watching this movie, have the nostalgia for it, and love it, and, like, I watched it and was just like, this is not fun, this is annoying, I don't like anything about it, it's not for me. And then, like, I did research, and Tim Burton basically, like, he didn't really have anything to do with it at first, and then he saw, and then I think he just slapped his name on it. He bought it from Disney and just slapped his name on it.
Well, he worked for Disney, and he designed most of those characters, but then Henry Selick is the one that actually, Selnick, the one that actually directed it. So, like, he was a producer on it, and that was it.
Yeah.
So when it came to it being distributed later, because Nightmare Before Christmas had gotten so big, and because Tim Burton was connected to Disney, quote unquote, and as the producer, they were able to slap his name all over it instead, which allowed him to bank on the success of a movie he didn't really have as much to do with as everybody thinks he did.
Exactly. So, like, and that was, like, an issue I had during school, and, I mean, I've lessened my hatred of it, right?
Because it's just one of those things that just, like, that's not worth it. Right, it's one of those things that's just not worth your time
exactly,
at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, I definitely, like, harped on it while I was in school, because it's, like, it was something I could harp on, and, like, this is stupid, I don't like this, this isn't how movies should be, blah, 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 right? But so I'm watching Beetlejuice, and I'm like, I don't get the appeal of it, I guess because it's zany and crazy, and, like, I mean, what's his name? I can't even think
of it. Michael Keaton.
Thank you. Michael Keaton's cool and, like, does a really good job, but, like, he's not, like, it's not fun to watch. Like, it hasn't aged well at all. It hasn't aged well at all. Because
when I rebought it on Blu-ray, or when I first got my Blu-ray player and I was, like, building up movies or something, I got Beetlejuice and rewatched it. And I don't remember stuff in it not aging well, but I also, who knows, because, again, I've watched it so many times that there's probably stuff in it that I did and it just went, not over my head, but, like, it just kind of passed through as just, like, yeah, this is the movie or whatever, because there's nothing that, to me, particularly, like, stands out, but it also would not surprise me if I sat down and watched it right now and been like, oh, yeah, no, you're right, that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, a lot of it comes from Beetlejuice, and, I mean, not even arguably, he's the villain of the thing, so him being misogynistic and, like, saying shit that you shouldn't be saying, it makes sense because he's the villain.
Oh, yeah,
but
that's...
the whole time I've known, like, my ideas about this movie, I've always thought that you were supposed to root for Beetlejuice.
That's a big part because of the cartoon. Because in the cartoon, he becomes just, it becomes the Beetlejuice show with Lydia as a sidekick.
Exactly.
And they ignore the part where he tried to marry a teenager in the movie.
Yeah. And, like, so I'm watching it and I'm like, I must be, like, I'm missing it. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I don't know. But, like, I have seen the Deo scene. I've seen the dinner scene my entire life, right? I know that scene. It gets referenced a whole bunch. So that scene happens and I'm like, so I've seen the best scene of this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
and
hands down.
I never needed to watch the actual movie.
Yeah. I mean, I like watching it because, like, I like Geeta Davis and Alec Baldwin in that movie just as an, like, just because it's, I don't see Gina Davis enough, and it's a different version of Alec Baldwin than you usually see, especially these days. And I think the big reason that the movie, I think, got really big when it first released is it came out a year before Batman. I think it was 88. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time that anybody had seen Michael Keaton do something like that, because before this, he was Mr. Mom. And he was like, and he was a comedy goofy guy. He was not like, this was like, this is pre Joker. It was this. And then he does, not Joker, Batman. He does this and then does Batman the next year. And this is when Michael Keaton all of a sudden goes from being like doofy, you know, Multiplicity, Mr. Mom, be comedy guy to being like, oh, this guy can be like a character actor. And so like, I think that was a big part to what makes Beetlejuice so big to people who saw it at the time when it came out. People my age, I mean, that movie came out the year before I was born. So like, I've only ever seen it on like on Comedy Central and stuff. But again, I grew up with Michael Keaton as Batman. So to then see him as Beetlejuice at some point in my life was interesting, because didn't see Michael Keaton outside of Batman very often.
Yeah.
So I think that's a thing that gets ingrained in more than anything, is just that like, oh, it's different, which can only get so far. Like, it can really, like, it can get you far. I mean, that's what Tim Burton did. Tim Burton made, quote unquote, different movies at first. And so that got him way more, that gave him way more credit than he ended up deserving in the end.
Yeah.
Because it turns out he's got like one shtick.
Yeah.
So
it's weird, but like, because like, maybe it's because I've seen Michael Keaton in other things. Like, it just didn't jive well. And I'm like, Michael Keaton's a great actor. Like, he is bringing this character to life, and that's cool, but I don't care to watch it. Like, it's not fun. I don't like Beetlejuice. He's not fun to watch. And then it really just felt like things kind of just happen in the movie. Like, they say that it's just, like, small, stupid shit that, because I wasn't really enjoying it, I was picking up on. Like, they say Beetlejuice, 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 which, oh god, let's hope Beetlejuice don't show up. But, you know, they say Beetlejuice three times, then she finds out that, you know, by saying home three times, you get back home, which, like, that feels stupid. And then there's another point where she says Beetlejuice again three times, thinking that, like, knowing it's gonna trap him again. So it's like, so Beetlejuice calls him, saying his name three times, calls him and also traps him.
It's
so,
like
that
Rumpelstiltskin, I guess, in a way. Yeah, I mean,
I
it's
wonky. That was messy
rules.
And then all of a sudden Beetlejuice is like, oh, the only way I could get out of here is if I get married. And it's like, what?
I always assume that meant he couldn't leave the house. Like, they could. I was. Because that was the other part of this, is that, like, I look at this movie as sort of a parody of something like Poltergeist. Obviously, you know, family, rich family moves into the house, and then it turns out the house is haunted, kind of thing. So my assumption was that, as far as the, like, calling him and all of that, he still couldn't leave the house until he was officially, you know, whatever, married to Lydia or whatever shit, dumb plot he has going.
But
I assumed they were still trapped in the house itself, even when he was taken out of the model and summoned and all of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it just...
Because that's generally the rule, because they open the door and they're in the desert with the giant sandworm.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. So I assume that was the thing,
But then it was like, oh, so he's trapped in the model, too. I don't know. It was just, like, there wasn't enough explanation for shit. And I'm okay with that if you have a fun, cohesive story that I can get lost in and not care about the world if it's not built up to any specific thing. But there was just so much, like, that distracted me from enjoying the movie that it was just like, this is,
yeah, I mean, it's very much
and like, there's that whole story point of Lydia, like, she wants to kill herself, and the only, like, feeling that you have is there's a one-off line of like, oh, people who kill themselves end up being civil servants for the rest of eternity. And it's like, oh yeah, okay, so you get to see that, but then that line happens and people, like, laugh it off, and then you see Lydia contemplating suicide, but, like, you don't get to live in any of those moments. And then I don't know. It just it moved too, almost too quickly. It, like, bounced around too quickly to allow me at like at, you know, me watching it's... it to live in any of the moments, to actually like have any feeling towards any of the characters.
Yeah, and it's definitely of a moment. Well, here's the I mean, yeah, and there's, I think, plenty of people who would argue that, oh, it's a comedy movie. Why are you worried about that? And I think it's because, again, these days, that's what comedy movies especially have become. The 80s, that point in the 80s, there was definitely a, well, wouldn't it be funny if this happened next thing that mm-hmm. always got kind of slapped onto things and with less regard for an actual plot. I mean, a big one is, look, it's surprising Ghostbusters works in a lot of ways, because that is a movie where entire things were filmed and then cut out, like the ghost blowjob scene where Dan Aykroyd just gets a ghost blowjob and he's wearing a Confederate outfit. And everyone's like, why did that happen? It's like, well, it's because there was a whole 20-minute scene where they were running around a fort or something where they were dressed like that, and that happened. And then they decided to cut the whole scene, but they just left that in during the montage because they thought it would be funny if it happened. Yeah. Like, there's like a big, that's just the kind of thing that happened then. And there's definitely people who like wish comedy would go back to that sort of thing. And so I think that also keeps a lot of these movies propelling forward, because it allows for things like the Deo scene gets remembered and no one has to remember most of the other movie. Like, we remember the Deo scene, and we remember the waiting room, and we remember the scene where they make their faces funky, because mm-hmm. I know I do. And otherwise, the rest of that movie, it's like I'm watching the movie for the first time sometimes when I watch that movie again.
There's just nothing. So... there's nothing substantial. Like, it just, there's no like meat to it, and that's not fun. I mean, there are comedies that move very quickly and don't really. I mean, I don't need to sit 20 minutes on a joke, Deadpool 2, or Deadpool. Is it Deadpool 2 where he has the baby legs?
I think it was Deadpool 2, because I remember you explaining it to me, but I still haven't seen it.
Like, I don't need to sit on a joke for 20 minutes. But, and that's not even what I'm talking about. I just, like, there's not, it never felt like I care. I never, like, there was never a moment where I cared enough about the characters to feel anything for them. Like, I feel like I didn't get to spend time with them, which is really weird. Like, there's a whole storyline of, like, Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis apparently cannot conceive children. And, like, that also is just, like, a one-off story, like, a one-off line. And it's like, okay.
That's called, here's the plot reason for why they're so attached to Lydia. Yeah. You don't need to have more to that. Like, that's, like,
I know, but it's just, like, I don't know. It just feels, it felt rushed. It felt like a very rushed story, a rushed screenplay, and a rushed in general, because they were like, we have some funny scenes that we want to get out and we need to fill up the rest of the area of the movie. And I don't know. Was it a book before or something?
No, I don't think so. As far as I know, this was entirely at Tim Burton Ridge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I, for some reason, thought
it is off of things
it
like
was an adaptation.
At the very least, it's off like, as far as him getting to make the movie is off of the success of like Pee Wee's Big Adventure. Mm-hmm. So like, I would not be surprised if someone went, well, Pee Wee's Big Adventure was so big, but of course he had Paul Reubens to work with at the time who created that character and everything. And still, again, I'm sure I would go back and watch that movie and be like, half of this is not funny. What's going on? Yeah. But I think that was one of those times where someone went, well, go ahead and give him the blank check, everybody. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it just felt
technically,
like,
financially, it worked out for them. But, you know,
yeah, I don't know. It was like, we have some really good ideas for visual scenes, but we don't have a movie. We need to fill the time between these scenes.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's entirely fair. At some point, also, again, it's not like I'm not going to take this and go, now I have to go watch Beetlejuice and see if she's right. I'm going to probably in like 2 years go like, I haven't watched Beetlejuice in a while and plop it in. Yeah.
I don't know. It just, it felt really weird. And then again, like, it's that feeling of like, why does everybody like this? And then you just remember it's nostalgia. And then, like, that just brings in a whole thing. Like, maybe the things that we were nostalgic for, we should revisit and be like, oh, okay, this isn't as good as I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you can still enjoy it. I mean, there are things from my childhood that I still enjoy that definitely, like, is different now. But I just can articulate that, you know, this isn't good. this is not good anymore, but I'm still going to enjoy it. And that's fine. That's okay. Beetlejuice is just not a movie I enjoy.
And that's fine.
But yeah, that's about it.
Well, I've also been like watching movies and doing stuff, actually. Thematically, we'll do the movies first, because thematically I can go from Beetlejuice to Harold and Maude. So you've watched it.
Yeah, so I watched that. We did, in school, we would have like screening nights every once in a while, and someone decided Harold and Maude would be a good film screening.
Here's the thing, Dale. It's one of the best movies I've watched since I started this whole fucking thing. I wish I'd watched it years ago.
Oh my god. There is one scene in Harold and Maude that I would watch again.
Is it the one where she falls over the steps?
No. It is the hanging scene.
Oh, also good. Yes.
Like, that is the one scene I remember. Oh, like vision, like just remember off the back of my hand, and the only scene I would ever want to watch again, even though it's super dark and like I don't generally enjoy that kind of imagery, but that scene is great.
Oh man,
that movie
I don't
is not.
I thought it was just, it was so refreshing to watch after all of these other movies that have been felt like fucking drags.
That's so weird, because Harold and Maude is such a like a drag of a movie.
It's, I mean, what are you talking about?
It's
hilarious.
It's dark. I mean, it's dark comedy, right?
I mean, it's a slow, so like, I mean, it's a slow paced movie also.
Yeah,
but,
it's a slow paced
movie. But even then,
movie.
It didn't feel that slow.
Yeah.
Didn't feel as slow as having to slog through freaking West Side Story, I'll tell you that.
Still haven't seen West Side. I mean, Harold and Maude is definitely a movie that I feel like I should watch again outside of an event screening.
Yeah, I definitely
thing.
Like it was definitely nice to be like settled in by myself, drink in my hand, getting into a movie that I knew some people who had liked it, and I had a vague understanding of the plot of Harold and Maude, in that I had watched that American Dad episode in which Steve is just doing the plot of Harold and Maude, where he's dating the old woman and then Snot dates her. So, like, I was not entirely sure what to get into. So when I realized the other side of that, the other half of that story, which is all of the dark. Here's the thing, guys. Part of the reason I watch horror movies is because I like processing dark shit through entertainment. Like, Better Off Dead. I think Better Off Dead's also a great movie. Also a movie that is basically Harold and Maude on the suicide angle side of it, in which he's trying to kill himself the whole movie, but failing horribly in funny ways. So like it hits a thing that I enjoy. So, and I was like, oh, we're gonna do that this whole movie too, that's great. The scene where they where the stabbing scene with the actress who like he tries to pretend to kill himself to freak the girl out, and she's like, oh, I'm an actor, I'm going to do Romeo and Juliet scene now.
Yeah,
that was great. And like when he sets himself on fire, the girl just like watches out the window and freaks out and runs away, and he just walks in out of nowhere.
That's the scene, like that's the best scene of that movie for me, because it's just like he's outside, this girl is talking, getting talked to, like she's a potential date for him or whatever, and then he's out there, and that's the hanging scene, right?
The hanging scene is the very first one, when his mother walks in and he's just like hanging from the thing while she walks around. He sits outside and then sets himself on fire,
okay,
but then
so
it turns out to not be him.
Yeah. It's two scenes then. But that fire scene is like, that is the one scene of Harold and Maude that I could watch over and over again. Because it's just, it's the moment of like, holy shit, he's on fire. And then he just walks in and it's like, that's hilarious. That's funny. I don't care.
Also, it does also end with him walking off into the sunset playing a banjo, and how can you not love that? But anyway, so I watched Alma. That was great. That was good. And what I'm starting to learn here is that, like, I hate to say this because I'm going to sound like such an asshole, but so far, everything before 1970 has been, like, hit or miss, and everything after 1970 has been much more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, like, the 60s to 70s, like, transition was the, like, final... I mean, it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the final death knell of studio filmmaking, mm-hmm. and getting into something more, I don't know, personal or something about it without using like a bunch of weird, shitty, hipstery words about it. It's just like something about the way they started making movies in the 70s instead feels much more interesting to me. Because like everything I've watched in the 60s has been hit or miss. I mean, I love stuff from the 60s. Psycho, still like one of the greatest things I ever watched. It's also the first thing I watched, and it's the only one I largely remember. And I'm sure I'll find other stuff. I got plenty of 60s years to get through, and there's other stuff that don't even fit into the movies I'm watching that I'm going to go back and find. So it might just be that specifically there weren't good musicals, comedies, and horrors in the 60s the way there were other stuff. But the other thing I watched, and which was really interesting to me, was Duel from Steven Spielberg. It was his very first movie. It was actually only ever on TV. I don't know. I think eventually, I know Alamo Drafthouse did like a theater screening for it for an anniversary, but I don't know if it was ever in theaters before that. Mm-hmm. But Duel is just a movie about a guy getting chased by a truck on the highway in like the Southwest. And I could watch that shit for hours.
Wow. I haven't seen it.
And I'm not surprised. Like, it really was that, like, it was literally the first movie that Steven Spielberg made. It was made for TV, and for years it was just never talked about. Because, it's not like as soon as E.T. came out, someone went, we've got to put Duel in theaters. So I remember the first time I ever saw anything about Duel was when Baby Driver was out, and I went to go see it at Alamo Drafthouse. And for anybody who's never been to an Alamo Drafthouse, they theme the, the screen gems thing at the beginning where what's your name, Menounos, that stands there and talks to you about movies for half hour before the movie starts. All of that is themed to whatever movie you're watching when you go to an Alamo Drafthouse. So they'll play. So like for Baby Driver, they did like a thing that was like, here's the top five car chases that were part of whatever, or they'll just play commercials that are about cars, or they played the music video that Baby Driver was based on with Noel Fielding and stuff like that. So that was the first time I even heard of Duel. And then they were like, then like the whatever 40th anniversary of it came up. And so they did like a special screening of it. So it is just a dude driving down the highway, and there's this oil tanker following behind him. And then all of a sudden they get into a little like back and forth of trying to, one keeps getting in front of the other, and the next thing you know, this guy is just fucking chasing him down, and you never see the driver, and you never see, like, you see the main character, but you never see the driver of the truck, and it's just like, this guy, he's like stopping at places along the highway trying to figure out who to call, who can I call the cops on in the 60s to figure out, or in the 70s to tell them that this truck is chasing me, even though it's just like sitting down the highway waiting for you on this two-lane road. It was very good. It's very good. Also very slow paced, but 90 minutes, but like slow paced. Cause a lot of it is like there's a chunk of that movie where his big plan is, I'm going to go 30 miles an hour and let this guy get as far ahead of me as possible, so I never see him again. So you do have to sit through the 15 minutes of the movie where that's his plan. But it's still, it was really interesting. And I was like, yeah, see, this is, I could watch this. I could watch this before I watch Very Important Person, a movie about ostensibly a British comedy from 1962 that didn't make me laugh once. So yeah, been doing that.
Nice.
I'm at the very tail end of Witcher 3. I finished like the main story, and I finished one of the DLCs. So I'm in the final expansion pack, which is like takes place in what's essentially like fantasy France, not even written subtly, the first line as you're going into this place, you get the voiceover from Geralt that's like, going to Toussaint always felt like going into a fantasy fairy kingdom to me. And of course, it's like bright green colors, bright blue sky, castle out in the sky. And the first thing you do is run into a giant wearing a barrel on its head, like a helmet, that's chasing like the most quintessential like fantasy knight around a village that's trying to kill it. So this whole the whole back end of that was like, okay, we did like a heavy dark story, so we're just gonna put you in this bright colorful place and just let you kind of fuck around for 4 hours.
That's cool.
So I'm almost at the end of that, and the only other thing I've really been doing is I got back into Lucifer, because I think another I would have sworn when Netflix bought the rights to the last season, to the fourth season of that, that they were never going to make another one. And the fifth or sixth one just came out.
Yeah, I keep seeing commercials for that.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I'm going to get back into this now. Much like Supernatural, it's in that same exact vein of, like, perfectly B-plus level procedural. The only weird thing is that with the third season was the season that Fox canceled it, but they had already filmed like four episodes for the fourth season before Fox canceled them. So they just kind of stuck those episodes into the season, two of which they just threw on a week after the show ended. So you get to the end of season three and you get like a huge cliffhanger at the end of season three, which would have fucking sucked if the show ended on just that cliffhanger. But then it's like, oh, and also here's two random episodes that do not address that cliffhanger, have nothing to do with anything. They didn't fit into the rest of the season somewhere else because they rely on information you should already have from that cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So it's like, here's two random episodes.
You know what I just realized? Do you have more?
Nope,
I'm done.
Because
I don't want to cut you off. So I have a question because you also watch Serenity.
Oh, shit.
But we also saw Bill and Ted Face the Music, and neither one of us have talked about that.
Yes, well, that's because, I mean, here's the thing.
And I totally forgot.
Both of those I could talk a lot about, and I don't want to go longer. So.
Fair enough.
We'll save those for next week, I think. Because, I mean, the short answer is I watched Serenity 2019, and I loved it.
Good.
I have so many thoughts about that movie. Here's the thing. Definitely a cheesy, kind of dumb movie. Also, I haven't stopped thinking about it since I watched
good,
it.
Good.
And Bill and Ted Face the Music was just delightful to sit down and watch something that chill.
Yeah,
that was just
exactly.
Nice. That was cool.
Yeah. I totally forgot that I watched Bill and Ted what the hell?
Face the Music?
No. Bill and Ted.
Oh, you watched Excellent Adventure and
Excellent
did you
Adventure
watch Bogus Journey
and
as well?
Bogus Journey. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, sorry, I have to ask this and then we can push it all till next week, but how do you feel about Bogus Journey?
It is the weakest of the three movies.
I would say so, but also I still love that one too. It's definitely the weakest, but I was still.
If I were to sit down.
It's the most Beetlejuice of the three of them, really.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to sit down and watch Bill and Ted, I would only watch Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Really? I would sit down. I'd have no problem sitting down and watching all three of them.
I mean, the reason I like Bogus Journey because I like the story with death. But there's a lot of that movie that could be condensed and cut down and it's just not needed.
In fact,
of that movie that is not needed.
And you want to know how we know this? Because in Bill and Ted Face the Music, their daughters go through both of those movies in the span of one of them. But anyway.
Exactly. But for me, the first Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure felt like watching Time Warp Trio. And if you know me, I fucking love Time Warp Trio.
We've talked about Time Warp Trio.
Yes, we definitely have.
Okay.
Because it was one of my favorite like book series as a kid and one of my favorite TV shows as a kid. And it's just so much fun. So it literally felt like watching Time Warp Trio, and then Face the Music felt like watching Time Warp Trio even more so. It felt like watching their because in Time Warp Trio there's Sam, Fred, and Joe, and then they have like great granddaughters named Samantha, Freddie, and Joe. I think her name's like Joanne or something. There's a bunch of stories where it's the granddaughters doing everything, and that's basically what Face the Music felt like.
Two things. One, nothing is ever not improved by having Samara Weaving involved. So far, I have not seen a movie I did not like with her.
True.
We should all go back and watch Ready or Not, I say. Two, the thing that made me realize that I was like, this movie knows exactly what it's doing, is that for the first third of that movie, Billy is walking around with a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos in their hands. And as someone who sold garbage to college students for 6 years, that is the only thing college students eat. And I was like, oh, these people know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. So anyway, that's going to be it for this week. We just a quick, tight, short one. I don't even know if we're at an hour yet, but we're all filling in. We're all filling in our time with other stuff at the moment. So we're going to call it there for this week. But this has been Say Report Junior, a show you should be listening to, subscribe to, and downloading whenever a new episode magically appears. You can find us online if you search Say Report Junior on YouTube or on Spotify or on other podcast things like iTunes and stuff. You can also find us individually. I am at Sir Whiskey.
And I'm at Dale's Brain.
And on that note, we should all go have ice cream and, I don't know, watch Bill and Ted 3 again and Ready or Not. And with that, take it away, Liz.
Thank you for listening to The Say Report with your hosts, Dale Decker and Zach Serowick. Please follow the guys on Twitter and Facebook by searching for The Say Report. And you can always subscribe on your podcast channel so this is delivered straight to you and you can enjoy it every week. With apologies to your mother, we'll see you next time.